Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Mouths of Babes division here at Car Talk Plaza. Now, this was sent to us by an eighth grade teacher named Mrs. Angstrom of Northfield, Minnesota.
Angstrom? Is that it's the size of your brain. One Angstrom.
It's A-N-G. Those are A-N-G, S-T-R-O-M's. An Angstrom is a million of those. Anyway, she apparently taught a little lesson on radio, and she had her students listen to various radio programs and analyze them. And here are some of the comments about our show.
Well, they're hardly babes. They're eighth graders.
Well,
but here are some of the things. This is the analysis that they did.
And brutally honest, I might add.
Here's one from Josh. I thought the Car Talk show was the best show we listened to in class. When those two guys started talking, it was funny because they talk about nothing. This is Emily. I like their voices. I don't want to see them because I just like listening to their voice. Seeing them would ruin it.
She's right about that.
Seth, I liked Car Talk. I think the show is a good idea because people like listening to idiots. Karsten says, I like the format of the show. It keeps your attention but doesn't involve much thought.
Our sentiments exactly.
Oh, and that's it.
All right, well, we'll find out who these little twerps are. We'll hang a beating on them when we can.
Eighth graders.
Yeah. Don't you have an eighth grader?
I have an eighth grader, and I would have to say, although she has never listened to the show.
No.
Has no interest whatsoever. I would say that she would say all these things about me personally.
But you're the idiot thing.
Oh, here's the one. Here's one that says, Bill and Ray were funny in a stupid way. Bill and Ray.
Well, if you'd like to talk to Bill and me, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. With an I at the end.
Oh, an I-E.
Oh,
yes.
All right.
I had it with a J-E, but, you know.
Well, that's the Reykjavik spelling.
Yeah, the Icelandic. Yeah, where are you from, Kelly?
I'm from Detroit, Michigan, but I go to school at Miami University in Ohio. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was a cruel choice. Miami University in what, Ohio.
Yeah. I always have to say in Ohio.
And why, pray tell, is it named Miami University? Just to screw people up and confuse us?
Well, actually, I think it was named after an Indian tribe that was living in Ohio.
What, so. The University Indians?
I guess so.
Yeah. Oh, no, the Miami Indians.
The Miami Indians, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they were living in Ohio.
Yeah.
They went north in search of cold weather.
Oh, they just went to Florida in the winter.
So it's kind of funny. So
here you are stuck in Ohio someplace.
Yes.
And you're calling us for what reason?
Well, I have, at home, I have an 86 Honda Accord, and it's been having problems since August. I thought, you know, I'm going to drive it down to school this year. It'll be okay. My drive's about, you know, 4.5 hours. After about 2 hours, it started bogging out, and, bogging out. It would start to shut itself off, like, around 65 or 70 miles an hour. So we would pull over and turn it off and then turn it back on, and it would go for a little more, and then it would shut itself down again.
Okay, so it just kept slowing down and slowing down.
Yeah, well, and then it just cut out. You know, it'd be, like, at 50, and it would just cut out and die.
And you would coast over to the side of the road.
Right, exactly. Very dangerous.
Who's we?
My dad and I. He was driving down with me.
Why? So, why was he coming down with you?
Oh, to take me to school. And luckily my mom was following too, so in case something really bad happened.
Well, so your father just dumped you off at Miami University and said, good luck, Kelly?
Exactly.
Call me if you ever get it to run
see
again.
See you at Christmas, yeah.
Got it. All right.
So the mechanic I went to rebuilt the carburetor and put in new needles and floats. That didn't work. So at Christmas, I brought it home, and I switched cars with my dad, and we tried using a gas additive to put it in it to clean out the gas tank, and that didn't work. And then he took the fuel pump out and put a new one in, taking the gas tank out, clean, you know how you clean it and you reseal it?
Yeah. Who did this, though?
My dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
I like it.
Because, I mean, you have the classic symptoms of a bad fuel pump.
Yeah, and that's what he said, too. He's been reading the manual and looking at it.
So. And he changed the filters, too. This thing is carbureted, so this has two gas filters.
Yeah, he changed the screens with carb cleaner on the gas filters, both of them.
Well, the gas filter, the rear one, is a plastic filter that you just throw away. And, and the front filter is a metal filter.
He may not know there are two.
That you just, he cleaned the screen inside the tank.
Right, exactly.
But he did not clean the little plastic filter that's outside the
tank.
Yeah,
and the way you clean it is you throw it away and you put a new one on. There's one under the car,
okay,
right near the gas tank. It's a white plastic filter. And then there's one under the hood, which is a bronze-looking metal filter.
Okay.
And both of those should be changed because either one of those can give you the same symptom as a bad fuel pump. And, boy, he's going to be ticked if he finds out it's
so
a $6.
I know, we've done all this stuff, and it's not even
so
all
close. I mean, he should have... Well, it doesn't matter now. But, I mean, the classic theory is you always replace the cheapest and or easiest thing to replace.
Oh, that's not the way we do it at the shop.
No, unless you're charging people.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm talking
just
about...
Let's get that clear.
Let's get that clear. If you were doing it on your own car, that's what you would do. If you were doing it for money, you would first replace, and in your case, I think my brother would have first put in a new transmission. And when that didn't work, he'd throw in the $6 fuel filter.
So have Daddy-O check the fuel filter, because it could easily be that one of these fuel filters, and the more likely one...
So there's actually three of them, right?
Well, there are
five of them.
There are five, actually.
Five.
But there's one inside the gas tank.
Okay.
Which is supposed to filter out stuff like rocks and milk bottles in case they wind up in the gas.
Right.
And then there is a finer filter on the opposite side, on the other side of the pump, which is this plastic one, which I've referred to.
Okay.
And then there's the one under the hood, which is the last line of defense before the carburetor catches it. You figure with all these filters,
you
got to catch everything. And the reason they put so many filters is that the passages in this carburetor are so small, and that's the way they get the thing to be so fuel efficient.
Right.
They really miserly meter out the gasoline.
Hey,
which is why the guy, when he rebuilt the first guy rebuilt the carburetor, although it was a nice thing that he did. He was following the rule of let's do something expensive rather than let's do the
because
thing.
She may never come back again.
Exactly. And I probably won't.
And he learned that, I'm sure, at one of our seminars.
Right.
Charge first, apologize later.
Thanks a lot, guys.
But have Dad try those filters.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your help. Hopefully that'll work out.
Hey, Kelly, what are you studying at Miami University?
I'm studying microbiology.
Microbiology.
Oh, yeah. I love the bacteria.
Really? Great.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And anything that you've stumbled upon that you might want to share with us?
Well, I'm doing some research with adenovirus, which is like what causes respiratory infection.
Really?
So, yeah, if I get anything new, I'll let you guys know. You'll be the first ones.
Well, thanks. Keep us posted.
Okay, great.
A pleasure talking to you, Kelly.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
She'd probably love to roam around my basement.
She could catch any number of diseases.
Talk about microorganisms.
Woo! Oh, boy. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278. 255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, hi. I'm Robert Budney. I'm calling from Princeton.
Hi, Robert.
Princeton, New Jersey.
You bet. Yes.
Not
yes,
Princeton
indeed.
University.
Yes, indeed.
Both. New Jersey and university.
Yes.
Okay.
Got it.
However, I should preface this to say that in a past life, I was at that same Minimum Security Institute where you guys graduated.
Oh, really? And you went from there to Princeton?
Yep.
Let's see. We're going to figure out, therefore, you must be...
A mathematician.
No.
Well, yeah,
I think
I got
a physicist.
But I'm a physicist here.
We're both right.
Yeah, but I'm doing work on controlled thermonuclear fusion.
Controlled thermonuclear fusion.
Oh, you're working with those Pons and Fleischmann guys?
Well, we're the... we
the heirs apparent to their...
we distance ourselves from them.
What happened to them anyway?
Whatever happened to them?
Well, one of them went in hiding, and the other keeps claiming that he's making progress, but the world doesn't believe him.
Really?
Yeah.
Because no one can ever replicate.
Exactly, because he's got the magic touch.
Maybe he does. I mean, it could well be that it's he.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, he may be adding energy to the mix.
He may be.
Yes.
In which case, what we need to do is clone him.
And give everyone one of him.
Exactly, right.
Stick one of him in your gas tank.
Yeah, exactly, or under your hood.
So anyway, Robert, why did you call us?
Okay, so I have a Ford Escort, and every time I take it in to get the it tuned up, the garage tells me, you haven't changed the timing belt. It's about ready to go. You know, you've got more than 80,000 miles.
And you say, I didn't know these thermonuclear engines had a timing belt.
Right. However, also I have this philosophy that if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And so I tell them that, and they say, well, you're going to be lucky if you get, you know, past our driveway without the... Uh-huh.
And, of course, you've gotten past their driveway many a time.
Many times, yeah.
Right.
So anyway, so what I'd like to know is, do you advise preventive medicine on these things, or...
What schools did you go to again? I mean, come on. Did you learn nothing?
Well, I learned to distrust engineers.
Well, I'll tell you, we because our shop is close to MIT,
yeah.
Many of our customers are professors at MIT.
Yeah.
And they are the hardest sell, biggest pain in the butt customers because they question everything and they want to know why. And if they taught as well as they ask, I would have learned something when I was there.
Well, I didn't.
No one does.
No.
You're not supposed to learn anything.
But yeah. they are, and you're a tough sell because, and of course you have evidence on your side that in fact they lied to you.
Yeah.
That the belt didn't break when they said it would.
How many miles on the Escort now?
Oh, it's 85,000.
85, and they told you to change it at 60.
Yeah, or something like that.
Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So you know that they're lying.
Yeah.
So then do what you want.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and the truth is that even if this belt does break, it will not harm the engine. What year Escort is it?
Oh, 91.
To 91, it's got a regular 1.9 liter engine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no.
What we call a non-interference engine.
You're right. If the belt breaks, you can just...
Yeah, but
it.
You might be. You do you ever venture out onto the Jersey Turnpike?
Oh, all the time, sure.
Not in that car. I mean, I wouldn't.
Well, I try to find a big truck that's going fast, and I get in.
And you hook onto it, turn off the engine.
Yeah.
No, the problem is that you really should do this, Robert,
mm-hmm.
because what's going to happen is the timing belt is going to break.
Yeah.
And when it breaks, the engine is not going to run any longer.
Yeah.
But it won't damage the engine.
But,
once
the
you replace the belt, then you can drive it again, but you'll be inconvenienced.
You may be dead because it may happen when you're on the outside lane on the New Jersey Turnpike and all of a sudden you're going from 75 miles an hour to about 3 miles an hour and three semis go over you and don't even notice. And then
well, the first one usually notices.
The first one notices. The second two.
But he can't stop because the other two are bearing down on him.
Right. They're all tailgating each other. And they'll just wipe you out. And then we won't have any more controlled thermonuclear fusion ideas coming from you. And that would be bad.
Yeah. I mean,
so don't be such a cheapskate. They're paying you good money for doing practically no work there.
No, they're not. That's why I'm driving a Ford Escort.
Well, let's put it this way. They're paying you good money for no results. I mean, are you any closer to it than Pons and Fleischmann?
Oh, yeah, we think we're a lot closer.
How much closer?
Oh,
how many degrees?
How many decades?
40 years.
40 years. 40 years, huh?
Yeah. 30. Maybe.
How does it feel, Robert, to work on something that you are pretty sure will be a failure in your lifetime?
Oh, that hurts. However, the quest is fun.
It is?
Yeah, and also the urgency, I think, is there because I believe in global warming and stuff like that.
But the good thing is there are other people. You're not the only one in the world working on this.
Yeah,
you have many colleagues all over the world.
Yeah.
And you collaborate with these guys or everything you do is a secret?
Yeah, sure. No, there's lots of collaboration. Actually, yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, that's fun.
Sure.
So you get to travel a lot. I mean, yeah, that's good. That's part
yeah, because all the annual meetings are in Antarctica.
A 1,000 feet under.
But it must take a certain personality to be able to work on something that you know you will not succeed at.
Well, I mean, that's happened throughout history. I mean, people worked on cathedrals in the Middle Ages and on the pyramids. And
yeah, that's true.
Do you have a psychiatrist that you see frequently?
No, can't afford him either.
But doesn't the school just provide one for the whole staff? Because
no,
all you guys are sitting there a bunch of losers.
Yeah.
PhDs up the gazoo. And failures. And you will always be failures even when you die. Think of your obituary. This is Robert. He died yesterday at age 85. He did nothing his entire life.
Right.
And he's still driving.
But he went to a lot of meetings.
He's still driving an Escort. And the timing belt.
And he still has a replacement timing belt.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, good luck to you, man.
Okay, good. Thanks a lot.
See you later. Thanks for your call.
Program.
You're a good sport.
It's got to be. I mean, you're working on something that you know. You're not going to succeed at. You're never going to. It's
well,
never going to come to fruition.
I think that takes incredible courage because it's easy to work on something that you know you're going to complete.
And I
think
suppose
that's easier.
I suppose it may be easier, and it's no different from anything that the rest of us are doing. What are we doing that's so great?
Right.
Nothing. At least they're doing something that, if it does succeed, will have tremendous impact on the world. And the rest of us, I mean, what are these jerks on Wall Street accomplishing? They're just making more and more money doing nothing.
Right.
I'd rather have his job. At least he's got a Ford Escort.
There you go.
And he's broke besides.
But Robert sounds fulfilled.
He does. I know.
He's happy.
So maybe the trick is to work on something that you know you can't succeed at. We're all trying to.
Ah, that explains General Contractors. I rest my case.
Oh, boy.
All right. Look, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll answer last week's puzzle. You remember it?
Was this the lawyer puzzler?
Close. Lab rats.
That's not nice. Lab rats have feelings, too, you know.
Well, the puzzler was about testing 13 bottles of wine for poison.
Oh, this was a very good puzzle.
It is, and we'll be back with the answer and more of your car questions in just a minute. So whatever you do, please stay tuned.
She transports me when the world begins to stall. Spinning on the axis of a silver disco ball. As Mercury gains momentum, sailing closer to the sun, waxing wings and ashes. On the street and my day's begun. My 1976 baby blue Ford Mercury Comet. Close the doors and turn the keys and put the pedal on it.
And even though Boy Scouts weep and say, hey, no one prepared us for this when they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was from my Revolt of the Lab Rats series.
Oh, yeah.
And it was sent in by a fellow named Andrew Magliozzi.
That name sounds familiar.
Yes, he happens to be my son.
Aha!
Anyway, here's the puzzler.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm ready.
You are?
No.
It's the eve of the annual Car Talk We Haven't Been Canceled Yet banquet. John Bugsy Lawler has procured the food and the wine, as you would expect, for the following evening's gala. And he's extremely pleased with himself because he knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. And he's obtained, for like $50, 13 half-gallon jugs of the finest red wine that $50 can buy.
The stuff he got last year came in bottles that said, good to 15 below.
And it tasted like antifreeze, too. Anyway, he's very excited about the next evening's festivities until Doug Bongo Boy Berman informs him that he received an ominous note. He's been told that one of those 13 bottles of wine contains a deadly poison that kills in 24 hours.
Who would want to do that to us? Oh, wait, everybody would.
Exactly. Anyway, Berman and Lawler are unwilling to discard the wine because they're what? Hopeless cheapskates. So they head off to MIT to consult with a scientist friend of theirs. So let's see, the scientist says. You have 13 bottles of wine, and one of them contains a poison that will prove fatal within 24 hours. And the Car Talk extravaganza is when? In 24 hours, they say. The scientist says, wait here, I'll be right back.
Yeah.
He returns with four small cages, each one containing one standard-issue lab rat. What a moral dilemma, the guys think. Do we sacrifice lab rats to save Tom and Ray? But then they realize that they'll be drinking the wine, too, so they decide to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
But wait a minute, they say. We have 13 bottles of wine to test and only four rats? The scientist says, you can do it, boys, and then disappears into the inky shadows. So you have, you ready? Four lab rats, 13 bottles of wine, one of them with poison in it, and you only have time to run your experiment once because the poison takes 24 hours to kill and the banquet starts in 24 hours. How do you do it?
Whoa.
Well, the answer is you use base two.
Oh, that's right. One, then two, then one and two.
Exactly.
Oh.
So if you have four rats or four digits, using base two, you can create 16 distinct combinations.
Yeah.
Well, here's how you do it. Bottle number one goes only to rat one.
Yeah.
Bottle number two goes to rat number two. You with me so far?
Yeah.
Here's the interesting part. Bottle number three goes to rats one and two. So if rats one and two are belly up the next day, it can only be because bottle number three had the poison in it.
Oh, very good.
And if you continue using base two, bottle four goes to rat three and rat three only. Bottle five goes to rats one and three, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And each combination corresponds to a different bottle, unique bottle of wine.
That's very, very good.
It's very cute. And our web lackeys made a nice visual explanation of the answer on our website. And it's a lot easier to understand if you can see the drunken rats. So who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Helen Nye from Montclair, New Jersey. And for having your answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Helen's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which she can get a copy of our latest CD, Tales of the Brothers Grime.
And by the way, for those of you who enjoy hearing me be humiliated...
Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah. This CD contains the story of the time that I dropped a customer's car off the lift.
Oh, yes.
Then I
a
had
little
to,
problem.
Then I had to call him and say, no, your car's not quite ready, Frank.
He said, that's all right, I'll pick it up tomorrow.
I said, no.
No, you won't.
Now, how's June? Is June good for you?
June's good, yeah.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler still to come, so stick around for that. In the meantime, you can call us about your car. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Jim from San Jose, Silicon Valley, California.
Hey, Jim. San Jose. What's cooking, man?
Hey, I got an 88 Chevy pickup, four-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
It's out in Modesto, California. I got a house out there.
Yeah.
And it won't start. Now, I've had it since it was new. It always starts one crank.
Yeah.
I get into it 2 weeks ago morning and turn the key on. The starter starts cranking, and it cranks and cranks and cranks, and the truck doesn't start. I turn the key off. The starter keeps on running. I turn the key back on, off again. It's still running. I jump out, take the battery cables off, and stops the starter from running.
How long did it crank and not start?
Well, until I got out and found a wrench and got the battery cable on.
Yeah.
So it cranked for a couple of minutes.
Cranked for a long time.
Well, I was scrambling.
Well, yeah. here's what happened. I don't know how it happened, but here's what happened. Your solenoid in the starter has somehow gone haywire.
Fried.
And it's cooked. You need to change. You may be thinking it's the ignition switch.
Yeah, exactly.
But I doubt it.
I
think it's more likely to be the starter solenoid.
And but it doesn't explain why it doesn't start.
Yeah, it does, because it burned out the fusible link for the ignition.
Ah.
You think so?
I think so. And you're lucky it didn't start.
Oh.
We've had cases where people have had their cars do exactly what yours did, except the thing started.
And then it blows up.
And then they've driven them for like 100 miles with the starter motor engaged, wondering, what the hell is this noise?
Yeah, see what
it
happens.
It didn't act like a booster motor or anything, huh? Didn't make it go faster.
No, it didn't make it go faster. In fact, it slows it down. So you're fortunate that something else happened that prevented it from starting. And what I'm pretty sure happened is you burned the fusible link, which runs right off the starter motor in this thing.
I see.
Ah.
Once that solenoid gets stuck, it's that starter motor is going to turn and turn and turn. I think you've got to pop out that starter, put another one in, and look for fried wires down there at the starter motor connection.
Fried wires, too.
Yeah, that's where the fusible link is, I believe.
Yeah.
And good luck.
Gee whiz.
Gee whiz. But you don't drive this all the time. It's stuck in Modesto, right?
Yeah, it's over there where the second most famous Italian brothers live.
Who's Ernest that? And Julio.
Ernest and Julio.
That's where it's at now, and I don't get over there except maybe once or twice a month. And
well
next I haven't worked on it again since then.
Next time you go, bring a new starter along with you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
See you, Jim.
All right, bye-bye.
Hi.
Hey, do you know what it's time for?
Time to dump our tech stocks and invest in heating oil?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. Stump the Chumps is that part of the show where we dip into our recent past to find out whether the advice we gave out on the previous show was helpful or actionable.
Well, who's our plaintiff? I mean, who's our player this week?
It's Nerif from Washington, D.C.
D.C.? Oh, no, he's probably a lawyer with the FCC.
No, he's a frat boy from Georgetown. But I scared you, didn't I?
Oh, yeah, now I remember.
I bought myself a 1999 Jeep Wrangler this year with a soft top.
Uh-huh.
On, you know, not realizing that those tops have to go up when it rains. And so I left it down. It rained one night. And when I came out the next morning, I look at my car and the hood's up. So I go over there, and my neighbor's sort of looking at me with this scowl. It's about 8 in the morning. He says, you know, your horn was going off about 5 in the morning. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
yeah. And then he says, oh, well, then I look at him, I said, did you do this? He said, no, it wasn't me.
Right.
Yeah, right. So ever since then, my horn hasn't worked, and I clearly think this is a case of car sabotage.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't an accident that he knows. Just say, all right, I give up. Yeah. Sometimes you have to just confront.
Play stupid.
Yeah.
Say, you're not going to believe this. I don't understand it. Somebody must have opened my hood, and they did something to my horn.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Do you know anything about cars? Would you take a look? And
stand back in case he slams the door in your face. You don't want to get a broken nose out of this. Well, at least we're restricting our advice to stuff we know about. Playing dumb.
Actually, we had a pretty good shot here. I mean, the horn system, I mean, how confusing is that? We asked him if there were any cut or broken wires. He said he didn't see any, so we said it had to be the fuse or the relay.
Well, let's find out. Nerif, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there, guys.
Well, before we ask you about your hospital stay, we need to verify that the answer you're about to give here today on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or the Washington, D.C. Neighborhood Association's War Crimes Tribunal. Is that true?
Well, that's true. No one's told me what to say. But then again, I am in D.C., and I don't know if promises go a long way.
They don't. No, and the whole thing's being recorded anyway. So how did you make out with the Klopex next door there?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't really have to play dumb. I just kind of fell into the dumb role.
Yeah. For some of us, it comes very, very easy.
Yeah. I tried your advice, and I went to the guy, and I asked him if he knew anything about cars, because I'd always see him walking around. And sure enough, he was really nice about it, and came over and started plugging away at those fuses.
Yeah.
He just pulled them all out and looked at all of them, see if any of them were broken, and sure enough, one was busted. But wait!
Wait a minute, he didn't say yet that it fixed the horn.
But wait, you're right, there's more to it.
Of course there is.
We knew it.
We had extra fuses, changed it, and it still didn't work, so I was confused. I was really confused, and I kept kind of asking him if he had done anything, and he said, no, I hadn't, and he was really honest about it. So he told me to go to the dealership and have them look at it. Well, when I went in, the dealer asked me what I had been doing to my car. And he figured out that I had been driving it in the wrong places. See, I like to take it out in that Shenandoah River every now and again.
Uh-huh. Oh, you didn't tell us this.
So anyway, the guy figured it out, and he realized that I had just broken the horn entirely by having so much water.
The horn was just all rusted.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have, what do they call them?
Boats.
There you go. They have vehicles for water travel.
I don't know if we're right or wrong here.
No,
we said it was something simple, but I don't think we can take credit for this.
Well,
because you withheld information. On the other hand, it's our job to draw out the correct information, like with simple questions like, do you drive in the river often?
Yeah.
And we didn't say that, so I think we lose on this one.
I think we get partial credit. What do you think?
No, I think you definitely...
Well...
I don't want any credit.
Nari, if you got outvoted.
Well... Here's the deal. I would have never gone to my neighbor if you guys hadn't really put me up to it.
Yeah, that was a pretty... Yeah, and in fact, now he's exonerated, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, nice guy. And we even invited him over for barbecue one day after
that. Oh, so. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, we still don't know who opened your hood.
Well, I think it was him.
I think so, too.
How many people could it be?
So, good luck.
Well, thanks.
And thanks for playing Stump the Chumps.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, if you hear someone on the show that you would like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, you got two options. Email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or don't email us and spare us the humiliation. In the meantime, if you want to talk to us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Christy from Kentucky.
Hi, Christy.
Christy with a K.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
From Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
The entire state.
Ronnieville.
Where?
Ronnieville. That's where I live.
Oh, Ronnieville.
Is it near anything we would recognize?
Like Missouri?
About an hour from Louisville.
An hour from Louisville. That's good enough for us.
Okay.
Oh, that's
all right.
Good.
We're with you.
What's up, Christy?
My car's making noise.
What kind is it?
It clicks like at a real slow, steady pace, and then the faster I go, it's like click, 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 like that until you really can't hear it anymore. And when it's warm outside, it's not as bad.
What kind of a car is it?
A 97 Dodge Avenger.
Okay.
Don't make fun of my car.
We didn't say anything. We're still working on Ronnieville. Jeez, give us a break.
So, let me get it straight here. You get in the car in the morning, for example, you start it up.
Uh-huh.
Do you hear the noise?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, so you don't have to be moving.
No.
Oh.
It just gets faster.
It gets... Okay, so now you start moving, and the noise gets tick, 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 tick. Is it a heavy or a light? Is it a ticking, or is it a gung, 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 gung?
No, it's light, I guess. Ticking.
And then as...
Is it a stick shift?
Uh-huh.
Do you notice when you're shifting gears that the noise kind of goes away for while you're in the process of shifting?
Or slows down?
You know, I really haven't paid that much attention to that, because usually by then I turn on the radio really loud. So
yeah. And then, but then the noise...
You're a woman after my own heart.
But the noise does go away once it warms up.
No, I hear it. It's just not as loud.
Really?
And the check engine light comes on about twice a week, and then it goes off.
Well, I know what's wrong with it.
I see oil.
Oh, well, yeah, I am leaking oil.
Yeah. Is there anything that's not wrong with the car? Can we maybe work from that base?
My heater works.
The heater works.
It's still going. I mean, it's old. It has 133,000 miles on it.
Here's what I think is wrong with the car. My brother's going to love this, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with your oil leak, or not even with your check engine light. But
yeah.
I think you have a cracked exhaust manifold.
Oh.
Really?
That's what I believe you have.
Is that expensive?
Yeah.
How expensive?
Hundreds.
Really?
Yeah, and I think when the weather is the coldest, the crack is the biggest. And that's why it tends to make the most noise when you first start it on a cold day.
Uh-huh.
It would make less noise if you start it on a warmer day. And it never goes away because the crack is always there and can never go away completely.
Would I be able to see this?
You wouldn't be able to see it, but if you had somebody plug the tailpipe.
Like with a potato?
With a potato. you might see sparks flying under
the actually, a potato's not a bad thing to plug a tailpipe with because the gases that are coming out are hot. So, but if you had a potato that was big enough so it wouldn't get lost inside, you could plug the tailpipe with the potato. And when you did that, when your assistant did that, if you had the hood open, you would hear the noise, and it would be much louder.
Huh. And that wouldn't, like, hurt anything? Just
temporarily.
You're going to do it for a few seconds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to find the leak.
And if, in fact, there is no leak, and we're wrong, then the engine will stall.
Oh.
Because if you don't let the exhaust out, that was the whole idea behind putting the tailpipe in my brother's top. I mean, I didn't mean to say that.
Well, I have to say that I do like this idea.
Uh-huh.
But I would go, have you been to a mechanic?
Take it to Ronnieville Dodge.
Okay.
Any mechanic with a stethoscope would be able to tell in minutes.
And a potato.
Yeah, a stethoscope and a potato.
Okay.
Good luck, Christy.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.
All right, look, it's now time for us to pause and reflect.
Reflect? Reflect on what?
I'm going to scrape up a new puzzle during this very brief station break.
We'll be back in a minute.
Rock girl in a rat rock car. But
Even though Ivan Pavlov reflexively rolls over in his grave to turn off the radio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. All right, here we go. Our erstwhile companion and chief mechanic, Vinny Gumbatz, being renowned for his prowess in arm wrestling, is asked to set up a tournament at the local watering hole where he goes and gets stewed every night.
Yeah.
It's to be a single elimination tournament, i.e., once you lose, you're out. No ties allowed. This is arm wrestling. You can't have a tie in arm wrestling, right? To his horror, 247 people have signed up for this tournament, and the barkeeper wants to know how many bouts have to be fought. I mean, figuring the bout takes like 5 minutes, he wants to know at what time he should start the event.
Yeah.
So that it will conclude before closing time.
Yeah.
Right? You got it?
I got it.
Okay. So Vinny is, he's in a tizzy now because he's thinking about, I got to set up a branching tree, count all the branches, and since he can't count much beyond 14, he's in a tizzy.
Hmm.
Fortunately, there's a little guy sitting next to Vinny at the bar, and the guy says, I know the answer. Vinny says, what are you, some kind of genius or something? The guy says, no, but there is a simple reasoning process which will allow you to instantly know how many bouts have to be fought.
Yeah.
The question is, if there are 247 people that signed up, how many bouts will they have to be?
In order to determine one winner.
There you go.
With a single round elimination.
And show your work.
Show all work. No partial credit.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a $20 bill. Or a stale Pop-Tart.
a great idea.
Well, Pop-Tarts are pre-staled.
They're pre-staled. They are.
Yeah, you de-stale them when you pop them. Or when you toast them or whatever you do.
I never realized that before. I had one the other day. I don't like to toast them.
You could re-shingle your house with these. If you ever got enough of them on sale, you could re-shingle your house with Pop-Tarts.
Raspberry. You could have raspberry shingles.
Well, and the frosted ones, Dougie says, they're waterproof.
And they're pre-painted. I love it.
Anyway, since you're Pop-Tarts, they got to sue us. I actually do eat Pop-Tarts.
Well, I see one in the cabinet once in a while, and if I'm really hungry, I will eat it.
Well, they ain't considering, though, the unique chemistry involved in these. They're pretty good. And they last forever.
Ah!
Yeah, I mean, have you ever looked at the package to see how old the Pop-Tart you're about to eat is? Never.
No, they don't have any dates.
No, they don't need them.
Yeah, although some of the packages still say, great for your bomb shelter.
President Eisenhower says.
Yeah, Ike says, I like Pop-Tarts. You may like Ike, but I like Pop-Tarts.
Anyway, send your answer to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238.
I was trying to remember the Puzzler. I forgot it already.
Or you can email your answer. Someone help me. I'm being held against my will. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com if you'd like to call us. Somebody please call quick. The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Mark from Boise.
Mark.
You know, Boise, Idaho.
Oh, yeah, that Boise.
I know.
I'm honored to be talking with you guys.
I even know where Idaho is.
Well,
what's up?
The only reason he can do that is that he has an eighth grader. And she knows where Idaho is, so he had to learn it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've got an 86 Colt Vista.
Oh, man.
Yeah, with 148,000 miles on it.
Oh, it doesn't get any better, does it?
I got to talk to you about engine lubrication.
Well, these don't need much.
No.
Spin-on oil filters are designed to be bypassed if they get clogged up, correct?
That's right. They have a built-in bypass.
I've got a situation where my daughter crunched the front of the car, and I cannot remove the filter.
Perfect. Leave it on.
So the question I have is, in order to keep this thing going as long as possible, and I don't know how much longer that might be, with that many miles, how frequently should I change the oil?
Oh, to keep the filter from getting clogged up.
Well, the filter's going to clog up.
You'd be surprised.
How long can it go?
How long has it been on there now?
It's been 3,000, 4,000 miles so far.
Oh, you've got... let me tell you. You may not be aware of this, but I own an 87 Colt Vista.
Exactly. That's exactly why I'm talking to you.
Yeah, well, that's right. He wouldn't call because he knows you don't know anything about any other car.
Oh, that's true. Well, I decided some time ago to do an experiment with my Colt Vista in the interest of science.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I decided to never change the oil again. So I'll call you about a week. I'll call you the day mine blows up.
That'd be perfect.
And you'll know how much, you'll probably have thousands of miles left if you're at least changing the oil. I've decided to change not only not the oil, but not the filter either.
Okay.
Huh. I've done nothing. I'm really in top-up mode.
Just today, talk about things being timely. Just today, I was looking through some mail, and we got a note from a guy who lives down the Cape here in Massachusetts, in Brewster, Massachusetts. I think his name was Wells.
Uh-huh.
And since we didn't respond to his letter through our newspaper column, he sent it directly to us.
Death threat included?
Death threat included. And he says, here's my question. He says he somehow was in the Army sometime or other. The Army, he says, did tests. And in these tests, the question was to change the oil or not change the oil.
Uh-huh.
And he has been driving a Ford something or other. Has 50,000 miles on it. He's never changed the oil. He says it runs like a dream. And get this. He says the Army tests showed that the best thing to do is don't change the oil. And here's the reason. The engine will be protected by metallic flakes. How about that?
Well, there may be a huge cover-up.
We know that the
involving
the military industrial complex
to sell more oil.
I've been using Restore in this car, like you suggest, and that seems to help a lot. And that has a lot of metallic flakes of various
things. Doesn't it, though?
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Well, see,
by design.
They may be privy to these Army tests. Now, this guy didn't
They're making that Restore stuff from grinding up old engines.
Well, it's some kind of homeopathic thing.
Exactly.
Right?
You put a little bit of a sick engine into everyone's car,
and
it builds up a resistance to it.
Yeah.
So I could change the oil whenever I feel like it.
I think you should change the oil every 3,000 miles and forget the filter.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to do like every 2,000, but...
I was going to suggest 10, actually, but...
Well, maybe with your experiment going and my experiment going, we can call this sort of a double-blind medical study.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to change the filter, and I'm not going to change anything.
Yeah, I think the 2 or 3,000 is the answer.
Super.
But isn't this a great car?
It's wonderful, except three teenagers have gone through it.
Well, that's
survived.
A testimony to its greatness,
it
isn't
survived
it?
Survived three teenagers.
Well, we're on the fourth clutch.
Well, clutches are disposable.
Yeah.
You got to just count on one teenager, one clutch.
Exactly. The first one went 70-some thousand. The last ones have gone 30 or 40,000.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
We've known clutches to go 1,000. That's no joke.
Not in this family.
Good luck, Mark, and keep us posted.
Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
1-888. I got to tell you a story because...
Go ahead.
Because if I don't tell the story... Sooner or later, everyone's going to know, and I figure the best way, if you did something wrong, the best way is to just do this catharsis.
And get it out.
And get it out
and
there.
And as they say in the media, get it over with.
Get it over with. So I'm going to get it over with.
Tell us everything you did. Did you inhale?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it fumes?
Yeah.
Was it from like a Dodge Colt Vista?
Carburetor. The other day at the shop, we were replacing a couple of calipers on a Mazda. Rear calipers. And one of my mechanics had installed them. Manny had installed them. And when he was finished installing them, he asked me if I could help him bleed the brakes. In fact, the car was a Miata. So I say, sure. So he has the car like halfway on the lift. And I kind of jump into it with one leg. And he says, okay. And the way you do this is you pump the brake pedal.
You get pressure.
You get some pressure. He opens the bleeders, and a combination of air bubbles and fluid comes out. And you do this until there's no more air coming out, and you're done. And, of course, the person inside the car knows that you're done because the brake pedal feels like it should. You know, so he's at the left rear wheel, and I'm in the car, and I pump the pedal, and he says, okay, hold it down. And he opens the bleeder, and he says, okay, pump it again. And I do that, and he opens the bleeder. And after three or four times, he says, gee, there's not much coming out here. Mm. And I say, well, keep trying. There's probably a lot of air in the system. And I do it again. And while I'm doing it, he's kind of leaned over, and he's looking inside the car. And he says to me very quietly, you're pumping the gas pedal. But your secret is safe with me.
Oh, no, it ain't.
Now, I don't know what his definition of the secret is, but there were people coming up to me that entire day that I had never seen before, made contact with in any way, shape,
or form. And were they snickering?
They're saying, most cars have three pedals. The one in the middle is the brake. I mean, so I figure I had to make a clean breast of it, so to speak, because everyone's going to know sooner or later. It's better they know. I better they hear it from me. Well, than from Manny, well, if he lives.
But most people will not hear it from you because Manny has set up a website and has sent out an email chain letter.
It's called middlepedal.com.
Middlepedal.com. You're right.
Oh, God. Anyway, 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's sad, 8-8. It is sad. That's what happens when you get old.
I was once at the pinnacle, recently, at the pinnacle of his mental prowess.
And now I can't even pump a brake pedal.
Man.
How fast we have fallen.
Oh, man.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi. This is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. We've been waiting for you to call.
How nice.
Now, where are you from?
I'm from Portland, Oregon. But
Portland, Oregon, yeah.
Soon to be from Panama.
No kidding.
And that's what the question's all about.
Really?
I bought 12 acres of rainforest about 1,500 feet off the only road. And I need to know how to get to it. Meaning, is there a difference between four-wheel drive and all-terrain vehicle and all-wheel drive? And which does best?
And two-wheel drive and front-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive.
You want as many wheel drive as you can get. If they have something called eight-wheel drive,
get it.
Go for it. Now, wait a minute. You are living a seemingly fairly comfortable life in Portland, Oregon, and you're about to trade this in.
Yes.
For good? I mean, this is it. You're going to abandon Portland, and you're going to move to the rainforest of Panama?
Well, the rain's warm there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, kid.
No, I mean, I'll tell you, it's warm in San Diego, too.
But it's quiet. There's sloths.
But you can't buy 12 acres in San Diego for $1.59.
And you can't wake up and see a howler monkey outside your window.
That's true.
Thank God.
Well, that's true.
Wow. And so, are you going down there by yourself?
I'm probably going to go with my three relatively grown-up kids.
No kidding.
What was that movie with Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
Did you see that movie?
It was
Mosquito Coast. Did you see it?
She did see it.
See it again. Yeah, and again.
And does this 12 acres have any edifice of any kind on it?
No, that's what we're going to go down to build. And, of course, there's a problem of moving cement 2,000 feet off the road where it's muddy.
Yeah. I mean, as far as getting to where you're trying to go, from the road to where you're going to build the house, the best vehicle would be a Hummer.
A Hummer.
Yeah, but I'm not suggesting that you get a Hummer because the Hummer has tremendous power. It can climb trees. I mean, you couldn't beat it for what you need to do. On the other hand, it costs an outrageous amount of money.
Well, I was told to get a truck with four-wheel drive, but
yeah,
I saw that's the one that got stuck in the mud.
Well, no, you want a truck with four-wheel drive, but you more importantly want one that you get from the locals, one that they're familiar with.
Yeah,
that they can get parts for. You don't want to get a Hummer because there aren't any Hummers in Panama. Maybe there are.
And you don't want, I don't think you want something fancy like a Land Rover because there probably aren't a lot of them down there either.
And you don't want something new and expensive because when it disappears in the quicksand. Hey, did you park the truck?
Yeah. What's this hard spot?
Wait, I see an antenna. Yeah, so...
No, I don't want something. No, I have a very, very, very limited budget.
Yeah, so, I mean, people there must have four-wheel drive vehicles.
You want I'll tell you what you want. You want a 70s vintage.
Uh-huh.
And there will be plenty
probably
of these in Panama.
Probably General Motors.
No, I was going to recommend Jeep Cherokee.
The Grand Cherokee.
The Grand Cherokee.
The Grand Cherokee.
Or Wagoneer.
Ah, that was
you
it.
Want a, right, you want a Jeep Wagoneer.
Big.
Big and ugly.
Four-wheel drive.
And mean looking.
And heavy. Heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, you want, that's what you want. It'll be easy to get parts for.
Okay.
Like maybe. It'll be serviceable, and it has simple stuff like carburetors and points.
Yeah.
You don't want anything too high-tech.
No fuel injection.
No fuel injection. I don't think so. So, look, buy the thing there.
Okay.
And like I said, get the biggest, oldest, ugliest thing you can get.
Okay.
How long do you expect to spend there? Like forever?
No, we're going down for 3 months. Come back for the summer where I have to work to earn enough money to pay for what we just built.
Yep.
And then go back in the winter.
Oh, so you're planning return visits every year until finally someday when you make friends with the monkeys, you'll be able to stay forever. Okay. Well, Barbara, it sounds exciting to me, and I admire your courage, if that's what they call it.
Good for you.
And please keep us posted if you can.
I will indeed.
And if we can be of any further assistance, don't hesitate to call.
Thank you ever so much.
See you, Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Hi.
Wow. Man.
Wow. That's courageous, isn't it?
See that? I mean...
And what do we do?
What do we do?
We go for cappuccino. Come on. Well, it's happened again. Jeez. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug, the subway fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David, the Calves of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug, the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Bangalore Soup du Jour, Loin of Boar, Al Pastor, Shrimp Tendor, Albacore, and Petit Four, Ship to Shore, Omnivore, Eat Some More, Luncheon Tour, is John Pugsley Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our yodeling instructor from Hawaii is Leo DeLehiu. Our personal trainer is Euripides Abs. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luce Cruz. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the hedge fund managers selling falafel in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
Ah, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1008, Waltz Through the Car Talk Archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, if you're looking for a new car, why pester people in parking lots for their opinions?
Yeah, I mean, my brother got arrested for the second time doing that last week.
Instead, check out the Car Talk survey. 10,000 responses by car owners who tell you what they think of their cars.
Yeah, with no danger of getting whacked in the head with a grocery bag.
Browse the Car Talk survey's results or rate your own car over at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though applications for offshore oil rig positions increase whenever we say it, this is NPR.